Give the gift of rugby this Christmas. Make sure the rugby fan in your life kicks off 2026 the right way by seeing Munster take on Cast Saturday, January 17th at 5:30 p.m. in Thomond Park. Tickets available now at munsterrugby.ie.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Brought to you by Standard Life. Retirement specialists getting you ready for your second life.
Much to discuss in the news this morning, including lots of excerpts on the from the new book on DJ Carey and exactly what he did to extract money from friends, cousins, acquaintances. The Mail leading with DJ Carey used dad's cancer to steal from his cousin days after funeral. Hurling legend told vile lies to secure cash. And of course, that's just the tip of the iceberg of some of the revelations. And there is an industry poll in the front of the Sunday Independent. 53% say Micheál Martin should quit as Fianna Fáil leader, with 60% backing Jim O'Callaghan to take the role. And there's a number of pieces throughout the paper speculating about how long the future will be for Micheál Martin. I'm joined in studio by Kieran Cuff, co-chair of the European Green Party, Lise Hand, journalist, Matt Cooper, broadcaster and author, of course, of the new book, Dynasty Scandals, Triumph, Turmoil, and the succession at the heart of Dun Stores. On the topic of scandals and turmoil, though, Matt, we find you in the midst of some following the revelations about Ivan Yates. We should get this out of the way at the start. You and Ivan Yates had this podcast, Path to Power. It emerged, we understand, that Ivan Yates was both commenting on Jim Gavin as a presidential hopeful, while at the same time training him for debates. When did you discover this?
Yesterday morning, when I got a text message from a friend who said, "Have you seen this on the front page of the Irish Independent?" And yeah, I was gobsmacked, shall we say, quite shocked by it, because this was complete revelation to me. And I suppose then I went to a bit of being angry about it, because I felt that, oh, how would I express this? I said, you know, Ivan and myself have been working on this podcast for 2 years now. And if I can just take a minute or two, maybe just to explain how it all came about. About 2.5 years ago, I had the idea for a political podcast, and I had worked with Ivan on The Tonight Show on Virgin Media Television and had gotten on well with him. And I saw that there was an opportunity for a podcast to be developed. I approached Noel Kelly Management, who represented Ivan and represent me, pitched the idea. Then we spoke with Ivan and we reached an agreement on setting it up. And we've had a great time doing it. I mean, I've really enjoyed working with Ivan over the last 2 years and working with the people in Noel Kelly Management as well.
And had a lot of success.
It became very, very popular. And I suppose it became very, very popular. We have two weekly editions. There is one sort of free-to-air edition as such, which is covered by sponsorship and also by advertising revenue. Although in the first year, we didn't have a sponsor. I mean, limited advertising revenue. And particularly, you know, we kept at it and we worked away with it with very limited income on it. And, you know, let's face it, it's a commercial venture as well. And but then we put a sponsorship. We put a subscription edition in about a year ago, and we have a healthy subscriber base as well to make this. So, anyway, the relationship has gone well. And then yesterday morning, I saw this, and my immediate reaction was, well, he should have told me that he was doing debate preparation with Jim Gavin, because that was material information in relation to how we would cover all of our conversations, our many conversations about the presidential election campaign. And if he had told me, that is something I believe I would have said to him, this has to be disclosed to our listeners, that this is important so that listeners know. It probably would have meant that as Jim Gavin went through his pretty disastrous appearances on radio and television, I would have been slagging Ivan off. You're not doing a particularly good job for him, are you? But, you know, I would have expected him to have a thick enough skin to be able to deal with that. But I thought that the important thing is the transparency for our listeners.
But had it been disclosed, you would have left him in place. You would have.
I would have. As long as he was willing to actually discuss it on air so that our listeners would know that this was his position, that he had given. And I don't think, as some people are suggesting, I don't think he was sort of a strategic advisor as such to the campaign or whatever. But he did, for the Irish Independent report said, and which he hasn't denied, and which has been said by others now within Fianna Fáil, he provided debate preparation for Jim Gavin. And as far as I was concerned, that is material. And
I don't feel duped.
I don't know what he was thinking. I don't know what whether he thought that he deliberately hid it from me or didn't think it was worth telling me. Whatever his thinking was in relation to it, I still regard it as material. And I know this, I've got lots of messages since, and some of them from subscribers who were coming into the email address that we provide to subscribers, some giving out to me that this is another example of me being woke and that I should have laughed this off. And a lot of other people saying, you know, this is the correct thing to take a stand, take a position on this, because a lot of those people getting in touch, giving out, you know, saying this is our political entertainment. And I know we were entertaining, but it's not just entertainment. We're talking about serious, important issues in relation to the country. And the election of a president is a serious issue. And I think those people who have subscribed or who listen are entitled to know where the various people that they're listening to are coming from. And I think there was a very serious omission on Ivan's part in relation to that.
On the spectrum then of response, you say some people were in touch saying, look, you could have laughed it off. There was another opportunity which might have been that you might have done another edition of the podcast and addressed it in that forum. You and Noel Kelly management opted to act very quickly and in a way that many might think was ruthless. There was a very fast response, and Ivan, we had a press release saying that he was no longer involved. Why be so cutting? Why be so definite in your response?
Well, the number of reasons for that. I suppose I've had long experience previously as a newspaper editor and then editing The Last Word and Today FM and having to make decisions. And I don't usually rush into decisions. But there are some times when a decision has to be made immediately. And there are times when a decision is actually becomes quite obvious. And that actually delaying that decision becomes a problem in itself, as far as I'm concerned. So that's why I acted, and I'm very thankful as well to the support I got from the likes of Noel Kelly and Niamh Tindall and Aidan Power yesterday when I made my position very, very clear as to what I thought had to be done to protect the integrity of the podcast. Because, you know, Ivan was going to withdraw from it early in the new year. He was talking to us about being available on an occasional basis, but not been available on a weekly basis. And I've started looking into the possibilities of who might be a new co-host or whatever. This now is really, we could have waited and said, oh yeah, we'll see it out. I'll go into studio with him. I'll have a row with him and then josh about for the next couple of months while we try and put new things in place. But I just felt the seriousness of it, that it had to be addressed correctly or incorrectly. I felt I had to make a decision, and that was the decision that I had to make.
You're quoted in the papers as saying that you spoke to him about that decision.
Yeah.
Once it was made. What was that conversation like?
Difficult. And I would have to say it was, he left me feeling quite sad. I mean, like, Ivan, as is Ivan, stuck to his guns. I don't think that would surprise anybody. So, yeah, I mean, I enjoyed his company in the studio over the last couple of years. I think we worked well together. I think we worked respectfully with each other, even though we would have different opinions on many things. But I just feel that this was just literally something too far.
Lise, what's your view on all of this? Was it a bridge too far?
Yeah, well, I think Matt made a very good point when he talked about, you know, a show being, you can take a subject lightly, but still understand that it's underpinned by things like integrity and transparency. And I think with trust in media at a low, I think those are two very important aspects. And I think it would have been very difficult for Matt just to go in and treat it lightly and just brush it off with one, say, as he says, maybe one bug on air row. I think it's a terrible shame because it takes a long time, a lot of hard work to build up a brand like that and get people involved, particularly, you know, getting subscribers to trust it. And that's now been detonated. But, you know, I don't think really that Matt had a choice, to be absolutely honest with you. I really think that he had to act quickly to try and maintain trust in the brand. I mean, people that will say, oh, look, it's, you know, they, you know, you're too woke and all that. I think they'd be largely outweighed by people that feel that what Ivan did was a professional and personal betrayal to be absolutely honest with you. I think this is something, and I cannot figure out whether Ivan was naive or whether he was arrogant. And we, you know, he's not a naive man.
But surely he didn't say it was in the public domain that he had been working with Fianna Fáil before, that this was another function of that, and that to some extent, this is the Ivan brand, that Ivan is brash and sails close to the wind, and that's what you get.
Yeah, but if you're brash, that, you know, brash also, some, you know, would also imply openness. So, I mean, what, you know, wouldn't it have killed him just to actually be upfront about this? And, you know, it would have been more brand Ivan to actually weave this in. But, I mean, the other thing I will say is that, you know, I'm not mourning for the brand, because let's face it, Matt and Ivan, there's no shortage of clever, opinionated, confident men sitting in studios. So they fall
long
in range.
Long may it continue. 5-3-1-0-6 if you want to get in touch, or 087-1400-106. Now, this, of course, does to some extent fit in with the issue that has become such a problem for Micheál Martin, which is Jim Gavin and the candidacy and the fallout from the candidacy, which is all across the front of the Sunday Independent. Kieran Cuff, 53% of people saying Micheál Martin should quit as Fianna Fáil leader, and pages of speculation about just how long he has left. Is it overblown?
I think there is a real concern out there. We've had a debacle of a presidential election. I think that reflected poorly on not just Jack Chambers, who was at the heart of it, but also on the leader of Fianna Fáil, Micheál Martin. And there's certainly a lot of discussion in the papers today about all of that. There's various pieces from Fianna Fáil backbenchers, James O'Connor from Cork East, talking very clearly about the need to think again about the leadership. But look, there's no vacancy yet is a headline in The Independent, and I think that's right. But I think Jim O'Callaghan will be certainly sharpening his pencil. And
but at the point at which the Jim Gavin thing seemed to be abating a little, according to the Sunday Independent, last night tensions between Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil were high after a report in The Independent that Ivan Yates had been helping Jim Gavin with his campaign. And I think the suggestion being that Fine Gael feels, well, hang on a minute, we were accused of Ivan being on our side over the Catherine Connolly thing, and Fianna Fáil should have come out and made clear, no, he's working for us.
Yeah, look, I think integrity has to be at the heart of politics, and there's been such a push in the last few years to make sure that we declare interests, that we from working in the world of politics in at a European level over the last 5 years, you painstakingly record meetings, you put them in the public domain, so any scent of mistrust is amplified, and I think that has reflected on Micheál Martin himself. So I think he has work ahead of him, and I suspect he's probably ruining the fact that he didn't put his own name forward for the presidency.
Well, what's interesting about it, Lise, is in these kind of situations, it is one thing to discover that your popularity ratings are dropping. It is another to see, I think, 60% beside Jim O'Callaghan's name, a real likely pretender to the throne. That can't be good news for Micheál Martin.
No, it can't. But I don't think that figure would be a surprise to that many people who've been watching this, because he consistently has been the very, very clear front runner. And it's interesting, though, that he really has not made any, he hasn't been throwing shapes, you know, in sort of heave shapes at all. And there's seven reasons probably for that. He's a newcomer still. He's a new kid on the block. I mean, this guy has only really held a senior ministerial position for less than a year. So when you look at, say, when Micheál Martin took over leadership of Fianna Fáil, he'd a decade and a half, I think, of, you know, sitting around a cabinet table behind him. So for a start, Jim O'Callaghan seems to really like his job at the moment and doesn't seem to be any great hurry to give it up. Now, you might say, well, you know, you've been kicked upstairs, it's a big promotion, but he obviously feels that he's got a lot of work still to do. And I think, to be honest, there's also probably still, among those that are there for over a decade, a kind of deep-seated horror of messy heaves. I mean, I was in Leinster House the day that it all fell apart in January 2011. And I remember standing at the top of the stairs just outside the Dáil Chamber and watching Micheál Martin being besieged by frantic ministers and party members literally pleading with them to go down the corridor and go in and basically say to Brian Cowan, it's all over. It was one of the most still, and if you talk to any of the veterans in there, the most extraordinary sight that any journalist has seen in Leinster House. And it was a messy, awful, terrible end to that government and to the Cowan Taoiseach ship. And I think that probably the older, wiser heads really don't want to, you know, a bloody letting. They want to wait until Jim O'Callaghan is good and ready. And when Micheál Martin shows some indication that he wants to go, and my God almighty, there's no sign of him letting go the levers of power just yet. This is a man who he might be 65, but by God, you know, he's the kiwi eating, you know, deep sea, or, you know, cold, you know, swimming guy that is, you know, feels that he's got plenty more left to give him. So I think they don't want to.
Is there not a significant difference, though, in that with Cowan, there was an indefinite future ahead of him. With Micheál Martin, there is the transition that has to happen either at the handover to Simon Harris or at the next election. And if you are the men in grey suits, that does give you a good time to go tapping on the shoulder, doesn't it?
It does. But I think that Micheál Martin, you see, there's a significant event that's happening in Ireland next year is that Ireland takes over the presidency of the EU, which is a huge event. It's always freighted with great, you know, sort of political, you know, moment and all that. And it's, you know, it's a kudos for the, you know, for the country. And, you know, we under, I think it was the presidency before last, the one that might correct me in this, you know, that was the time when there was a massive succession of countries came in. And, you know, it's a big deal. And I think Micheál Martin really wants to be Taoiseach.
He does. It's a big deal. Time. It's a big deal for all the political insiders. But for the general public, does it really matter who is our Taoiseach for that?
Oh, no, but for him.
For him. Yeah. I mean, a few weeks ago, Fianna Fáil people who were wavering even then about him because of the Jim Gavin debacle were saying, give him until the end of the EU presidency and let him go then. And I think Micheál Martin himself did, and he's been saying it in the last week, he wants to go into the next election in 2029, even as an old age pensioner. He is a guy who will not want to give up. However, I think the EU thing is going to become less and less of an issue, less and less of a reason for Fianna Fáil to keep him as leader. I think he's been very, very badly wounded by all of this Jim Gavin debacle. He's facing this report that's going to be laid in front of the parliamentary party on the 12th of November, which I don't think is going to be helped by the revelation either that Ivan Yates has been the person doing debate prep for Jim Gavin. And there's been some great pieces in the papers today. So if you go Daniel Murray in the Business Post about how Martin is deeply wounded as all eyes now on Big Jim. Jennifer Bray in the Sunday Times under the headline Crumbling Faith. John Lee has a couple of great pieces in the Irish Daily Mail as well, setting up, but in particular, a quite amusing piece about the gang that is trying to shoot at Micheál Martin, that many of them just spent the week out of the country. All this talk a week ago was there are 10 people out, you know, and they only need 12 to put on a vote, no confidence. Then half of them shagged off out of the country, off to Taiwan or off to the rugby in Chicago last night, which isn't exactly the most orchestrated of coups.
The dreaded J word, the junket was, you know.
And the other thing then is Jim O'Callaghan does not seem to be pushing himself forward. So, and I think Ger Colleran argues this in the Irish Mail on Sunday as well, that the two leaders of the parties in government, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, are probably at the moment lucky that there's not strong figures within their parties willing to try and push.
Although you'd argue Simon Harris is luckier in that respect than Micheál Martin, because Jim O'Callaghan does have some momentum
Simon
in a way
Harris
that it's hard
to put. Extremely lucky, because I mean, like, there's been so little focus on the fact that their candidate, you know, went up in flames as well, and you know, and also Simon Harris's personal poll rating has been subsiding, has been dropping. There's always, I think, an argument if say somebody's personal rating drops generally really quickly, it can be often, you know, on the back of some event happening or something, and you know, can equally bounce back. But when a popularity rating is just going down and down and down and down, that's much more difficult for a leader to actually recover from.
You're quietly getting stale in the back of the fridge, effectively.
The knives are going in slowly rather than kind of like quickly. And you know, again, it's interesting that when you look at there's a similarity with the poll on Fine Gael leadership. Pascal Donoghue is miles ahead of the next nearest candidate. I think he's on 50-something. And the next nearest candidate is, you know, in the 18%.
Jennifer Carl McNeill.
Well, tell you what, there's a few of those that are interesting numbers in terms of the leadership popularities and where they all rank in the total state of the parties. The Green Party not doing great.
Give the gift of rugby this Christmas. Make sure the rugby fan in your life kicks off 2026 the right way by seeing Munster take on Cast Saturday, January 17th at 5:30 p.m. in Thomond Park. Tickets available now at munsterrugby.ie.
With the state of today's economy, it is more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made of the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back into your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
In the political landscape poll in the Sunday Independent, languishing on 2%, Kieran.
It's not a great poll, and around Europe...
Hard to be worse.
But in the margin of
error. You don't quite get negative numbers, but it's not far off. Look, around Europe, it's a mixed bag. We just had a good election in Norway. Zach Polanski in the UK is making waves. But we are out of government in a lot of countries where we were in government a few years ago. And you don't go into small party politics for an easy life and for continuity.
Yeah, but Kieran, isn't there a much bigger issue in that? I'm just looking at this Sunday Independent Ireland Things poll, and it asks which of the following issues are the two most important to deal with. Climate change comes in at 6%.
Yeah,
climate change has just fallen down the public agenda when it comes to politics, which would suggest in many respects that the advocates of taking major action to deal with climate change have failed.
I think there's a communications issue on this, and I think we have to communicate better the risks that are there. I think a lot of people are tired of headlines about killer hurricanes and extreme weather events. So, look, I'm long enough in green politics to watch the pendulum go one way and pull back and come back in again. A wave certainly came in 2019, 2020. It's gone out at the moment. And obviously people are concerned with what is close to them, and the issue of the housing crisis, the issue of cost of living, the issues of immigration. That is what people are talking about.
But to Matt's point, there was a capacity before to keep two crises going at the one point. Even through the teeth of the financial crisis, there was still an understanding that climate change was an issue. I don't think we've seen it fall off the agenda to this extent.
Yeah, look, maybe people are just a bit punch drunk from having dealt with COVID, Brexit, Ukraine, the Middle East, the rise of the far right. There's only so many crises you can keep in your brain at the same time. What worries me, though, is that the larger parties are really deliberately pushing climate action down the scale. And Micheál Martin and others are saying Asher will be fine with the fines. And I mean, that's the equivalent of throwing matches on the flames, because we will see more extreme weather events in the coming years. And that is a real concern. There is a piece there, Dave Robbins, in one of the papers today, saying that we have to communicate better. I absolutely agree. And I think what's interesting in the last while, bringing passion into the debate. That's what Zach Polanski is doing. It's what Zohran Mamdani is doing in New York, to speak straight to camera with passion about the issues that matter. And I think we need to up our game on that when it comes to climate.
But are you paying the price for having gone into government?
I think we are. And the irony is, when we came out of government first time round, people said to me at the door, "Oh, you're ineffective, I'm not voting for you." Second time round, people said, "You're too damn effective, I'm not voting for you." And look, that is the dilemma of small party politics. The moment you're affecting change, people look at you and go, "I can't believe you've done that." And at the same time, people expect you to deliver all of your programme. If you've only 12 TDs, you're not going to deliver it all. But look, we believe in science. We believe in taking action on the issues that matter. I think the tide will come in again for the Greens. I think our councillors are busy. Our elected reps are busy at a local level. And that is where the comeback starts.
Lise, let's look then to the other end of the spectrum and the larger parties. Fianna Fáil down 2. Fine Gael down 2, Sinn Féin up 2, bit of clear blue water, 23% for Sinn Féin, and then Fine Gael on 19, Fianna Fáil on 18. and the two party leaders of Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, Simon Harris, down 5 to 34%, Micheál Martin down 10 to 33%.
Yeah, it's not looking great for, well, we've obviously talked in great detail about, you know, about Micheál Martin. But it is interesting, you know, going back to like Simon Harris, one of the other questions was when should Simon Harris stand down as leader of Fine Gael? And 45% said now. 18% said November 2027 when Fine Gael rotates the Taoiseach's office with Fine Gael. 30 said he should lead Fine Gael to the next general election, and 7 said he should remain on as party leader indefinitely. Now, they're not great figures. And as I was just saying before the break, I think that because the majority of the focus has been on the Jim Gavin debacle and the rumblings about Micheál Martin's, you know, leadership, that I think Fine Gael's equal dilemma has fallen slightly under the radar. But they are not good figures for him. And again, when you look at, when you sort of get into the figures about the combinations of governments that people like, I mean, the undecideds are still a fairly, I think it's about a 17% chunk or something like that, of people who still have not decided what permutation of government they like. So again, falling, you know, popularity of leaders, people undecided about what kind of government formation they like the next time. It just makes for an incredibly volatile atmosphere. And when you have a volatile atmosphere among the general public, anything can happen to the leaders of the parties.
And Matt was making the point about how low climate change was on the agenda. Still the number one, the mast to which their colours are pinned, housing. 50% of people still saying the most important issue to be dealt with.
Absolutely. I'm not a massive fan of opinion polls. And I don't particularly take too much interest in the party rankings, because it always becomes different when you actually get to voting time or even the individuals. But I do think it's interesting to look at what people say are the issues that they're really interested in. And this particular poll asked people to name the two. So 50% of them had housing amongst their top two issues, 41% cost of living. And I think that's important on the back of a budget which did nothing for taxpayers, which I think is a major issue. And now a lot of people, and I'm just realising I forgot to fill out my LPT return yesterday by the deadline because I was busy dealing with other issues. Damn it.
Ivan's to blame for that.
So I have to go and sort that out when I get home later. Immigration, an increase, 31%. And then everything else coming in much lower. And then you think as well, and this is, I think, something as well that both Micheál Martin and Simon Harris are going to face as well. Israel and the Gaza war is one of the two most important issues for only 4% of people. And one of the criticisms I'm hearing from people in Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. Yeah.
It's that low on the national agenda.
Low.
For something that gets as much attention and discussion and political focus.
And my understanding is that there are a lot of people in Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael who are saying, can we concentrate on the issues at home that really matter to voters instead of making your international obligations such a big deal? And also talking to Fine Gael people in the last few days who feel really that Simon Harris made an enormous mistake in taking on the Department of Foreign Affairs, making an Eamon Gilmore mistake when he should have taken on a domestic department where he would get things done. Although, that said, he does seem to be in agreement with John Collison that you can't get anything done in this country. And why is that?
Now, apart from the 4% on the attention for the Israel-Gaza war, the one that is also interesting is the one that has moved most, which is immigration, plus 11%.
Yeah.
That is significant. And 31% of people saying it is one of the most important issues to be dealt with.
And then if you look into as well, which is very interesting, they polled those who spoiled their vote in the presidential election and asked them for reasons. And you can give more than one reason, because any of the reasons given, if you said, yes, that applies to me. 63% said none of the candidates appealed to me or represented my views. 55% was a protest over the selection process for candidates. But here's the key one. 42% of those who spoiled their vote said it was a protest over immigration. This is a major thing. Now, maybe that explains why Simon Harris has been talking the way that he's been talking in the last week. But he needs to be really careful in how he actually talks about these
and
issues.
Back of an envelope, that's 100 and something thousand people then. If that's 40% of the people who spoiled with 200 and something thousand spoiled votes, that's big numbers.
Yeah. Mm. And that's why I think that may have provoked Simon Harris to talk about international protection applicants this week. But also what he said, which really surprised me, was about that we have too many immigrants overall. Now, the vast majority of the immigrants who've come to this country are working, they're paying tax. we need them. You look at our health service, for example, would absolutely fall apart if we didn't have immigrants. And I sometimes think a lot of these louts and hooligans who are protesting outside IPAS centres and the rest of it, you know, would they turn down the help of a nurse or a doctor who was foreign when they were in a hospital? I doubt it very much.
Well, I just want to get a reaction on where you talk about the IPAS centres, because the front of the Sunday Times, the IPAS centre in Drogheda, had previously, it had been previously supposed that somebody had either put a firework in the door or had thrown a firework at it, and that had caused a blaze. What John Mooney, the investigations editor of the Sunday Times, is reporting is that the investigation of the arson attack on that centre has been upgraded after CCTV showed a masked man breaking into the building before setting it ablaze with a can of petrol. That's horrendous stuff.
It absolutely is, and I think it may have to be treated as a murder investigation. I think we've seen some developments in that regard. I think what it shows is you can't ignore the far right in Ireland. I think the government has to take them on, as my colleague Patrick Costlow said. We need to take more action on hate accounts. We need to take more action on social media platforms that are allowing hate speech to go unchallenged. So I think we really do need to tackle that. But I would also say about migration is that it is linked into the housing challenges that we have. And you can't pull the two issues and make them separate, because people are rightfully concerned that it is more and more difficult to access housing. And they see a lot of people coming into the country. So we have got to get the balance right. For me, in the last while, one thing that raised my heart was going past the Mater Hospital on the North Circular Road. There's a lovely mural, a temporary mural on the side of it, and it shows the people working in the hospital, from porters to surgeons, and people of colour are really strongly represented. And I think that message, that the essential workers of Ireland, many of them are immigrants, is a really important one. That's important, number one. But number two, the housing crisis, which is not just an Irish crisis, it's a global crisis. The European Union will have a report out in January and wants to take action.
So, well, can I ask, Karen, is it housing makes it sound like it's an issue of mathematics, that if we had enough housing, we would be more than willing to accept more refugees. Is there not an issue where a certain cohort of people say, we just don't want this many foreign people in Ireland?
I think there is a small amount of people who are deeply racist, but I think they are egging on others who whose children cannot find housing. And this is a very real concern. And look, 30 years ago, we slowed down dramatically on building local authority housing. We said housing associations will deal with the challenge there. 30 years on, we're not able to build the capacity that's needed. And I think the examples from around Europe of countries like Austria, like Vienna, where they've built social housing in quantity for the last 100 years, these are the examples we need to look at. We need to tackle short-term lettings. We need to tackle off-balance sheet funding. There's many issues that Europe needs to act on, but also the Irish government has to take it more seriously. And I think if anything brings down the current government, it will be a failure on the housing crisis.
Yeah, just one pick actually to agree with Ciarán and Matt on just the issue of anti-immigration as well, because I often look with despair on social media. Part of my how I earn a crust is looking at misinformation, disinformation across social media and tech platforms and so on. And the speed at which, when an event happens, we'll say, like, there's a current event going on, literally live, of those stabbing on the train in Surrey. And within, I'd say, 30 seconds of that, the social media is immediately flooded with, this is obviously, undocumented migrant, or it's a person of colour, all over social media. And this is massively worrying. And I think, fine, you could say that it's part of the responsibility of the media platforms, or the social media platforms. But I think it's also responsibility of government as well. I think that education is massive, and media literacy is absolutely and utterly crucial. And I think it needs to start now. I think that proper places have to be to educate children, to educate adults, to actually be able to firefight these things when they happen. Because I am telling you now, when you look at the polls like that, it is fertile ground for the far right to field and have elected candidates on these platforms. And well, they need to have a robust plan in place to try and be able to counter those.
It's loads of stuff.
Give the gift of rugby this Christmas. Make sure the rugby fan in your life kicks off 2026 the right way by seeing Munster take on Cast Saturday, January 17th at 5:30 p.m. in Thomond Park. Tickets available now at munsterrugby.ie.
With the state of today's economy, it's more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made from the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back in your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality, made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
DJ Carey. Now, of course, the case has concluded and sentencing is upon us. So it has been well known what he has done. But there are now details emerging, particularly thanks to a book that has been written revealing just the awful grottiness of what he was at.
Well, I think that's it. I mean, Emer and Eve Raynon, who authored the book on him, it seems to be just full of more grim details about this, frankly, hard to believe story. I mean, in this day and age, it's hard, you know, to have your jaw swing at a story and keep swinging as more and more revelations come out. And that's one of these. I mean, there's so many different strands to it, to be honest, Anton. You know, you have the basic story is the extraordinary fall from grace. The other story is how can somebody cold-bloodedly perpetrate this ongoing and long-lasting fraud on taking advantage of people who looked up to him, who genuinely revered him as correctly as an incredible athlete and an amazing GA star. And it's when you then drill down into the people that handed over money. I mean, some of the stories are heartbreaking. You know, you have, you know, one of the, it was actually the woman who blew the whistle on DJ Carey, according to Emer's book. Margaret Kerwin and her husband Ger, who gave Carey 4,000 after he said he was suffering the same kind of cancer that Margaret Kerwin was. So to use, not only just to actually, you know, falsely claim that he was suffering from a cancer, but to actually exploit the trauma that a family is going through is actually, I mean, I find it hard to wrap my head around. And I think this is what people are having grave difficulty with, is he cold-bloodedly played on the inherent decency and generosity of ordinary people. Now, I know that there is a high profile name. Dennis O'Brien is obviously the high profile name. And, you know, to be absolutely honest, I don't think there will be a huge amount of publicity simply because he took a hit and he obviously was embarrassed by it, but, you know, he's not going to be left destitute by it. But it's the ordinary people who dipped into their life savings and dipped into their savings funds to hand over money when they thought.
And the quantities, north of 300 grand. I mean,
and he went back and he would go back to the well again to try and extract more money. I mean, it is an absolutely shocking story.
But how do you think
story?
He would continue to get away with it is also the thing, that if you keep doing this to people. Now, there may have been a degree of desperation on his part, but he'd had an enormous debt written off by AIB as well. You know, he'd made investments during the Celtic Tiger boom, which all went wrong. What I just think is, you know, what goes through the mind of people like this to do it in the way that they're actually doing it? To say he has cancer, to lie about that. But they think you can get away with it.
What's the Macbeth line about being in blood so far stepped? Is it just that once you've done it once or twice or three times, you begin to realise, well, there's no way to back out of this, so I just keep doubling down forever?
Well, you could have backed out at any stage and turned around and said, look,
my terminal cancer got better. That's a hard line to sell to somebody.
Or, well, it is, but you could say, look, I've been going through massive mental health issues. I've done really egregious things, and I will pay you back and make it up to you. I mean, there was always a point where he could have stepped off, but he clearly didn't. And it was the length of time that this went on, I think, is quite shocking. You know, this wasn't just over 6 months. This was over years.
I've only had limited encounters with DJ Carey. I worked with him on TV3's GA coverage. He did one game with us back. I think it was in 2013 down in Nolan Park. I think it was Kilkenny and Tipperary. It could have been Kilkenny Waterford. I think it was Kilkenny Tipperary. So I didn't really, he never contributed to the radio show.
Did he ask you for any money during that?
Well, a few years ago, as it happens, I was actually in a golf club with a friend of mine first thing in the morning, and we were rushing to get out the tee, and I saw DJ getting out of his car. And I was actually said to my mate, oh, Jesus, there's DJ Carey. Maybe just go over and ask him. I hear he's got cancer and see how he is. So I didn't, because we were rushing. And in retrospect, I'm glad I didn't, because it could have been very expensive.
Well, an interesting text to say, I was diagnosed with cancer last year, a cancer there is no cure for, as it has gone to my bones. I am particularly angered by what DJ Carey did. It is particularly low.
Yeah, absolutely. I think my heart goes out to anyone who has cancer at the moment and sees this story. It's awful. But interestingly, in the Sunday Times there on page 8, Ian Begley and John Mooney talk about that while he was defrauding others, he was tireless in his efforts to raise money for charity. And he was busy raising thousands of euros for worthy causes. And that goes in part to explain why the people of Kilkenny were standing.
Is that what you call hiding in plain sight, perhaps?
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's instances cited in some of the coverage where they did whip-arounds because he had showed up at medal ceremonies and he said, no, I'll throw it back. And refused money that he was being gifted.
Yeah, but given you consider, I think the point is well made, you know, when so many people have been touched by cancer in this country, and when so many people are so generous in helping those with cancer, to see somebody to pretend to have cancer.
Somebody who had such standing. I mean, someone who was a genuine hero to so many kids and to so many families, you know, who would have followed his career and been so proud every time he won one of his, you know, 5 All-Stars and, you know, 9 All-Star nominations or whatever. Like he, you know, would have literally just worshipped him. I mean, he was probably the biggest bona fide star they had, you know, and so, I mean, it would have been bad if anyone did it, but it just compounds the feeling of hurt and betrayal.
He was David Beckham of the 90s.
Yeah.
It just shows, though, you should be wary of putting people so high on pedestals. But it also shows the decency of ordinary Irish people who were taken in by the
story. That's a fair point. You meant people who were willing to try to help.
They were.
Money they
I know we've seen the high-profile names, but as the paper showed, there was a lot of low-profile names who were putting in €1,000.
And those
meant more
who couldn't afford it.
Exactly.
And we'll never probably see the money again.
Yeah.
Before I let you all go, Matt, I need to talk to you about the latest of your beautifully researched books, Dynasty, Scandals, Triumph, Turmoil and the Succession at the Heart of Dunstores. Do you ever sleep? Like, is there ever a moment where you think, I'll take an afternoon off?
Well, I might have a bit more time on my hands in the future. Actually, sorry, before that, Pat Tafar will be continuing. I will find a new co-host and all the rest of it and stuff. No, this story just was possibly the most enjoyable of the books that I've had to write.
Oh, what a fascinating family.
Because
and the way they are interwoven into Irish business, politics, scandal, everything.
Well, you see, that was it for me. Like, there was a whole million things. Initially, it started with being asked to write a book about Ben Dunne, and Ben is a fascinating character. And that was great. But there was so much more. There was all of his other family members, his interaction with them. The story of Dunstores is an incredible story when you think of it as a successful Irish business, which is so big and so valuable when we've had the likes of Tesco, Aldi, Lidl, all the foreign retailers competing with it. But it's also the story of how Ireland has changed dramatically since 1944 when Dunne's set up in Cork and how it's expanded from there since.
And Margaret Heffernan's role in that, when women were not in those kind of senior positions.
Absolutely.
Other than her.
I mean, actually, I realised I have been describing Margaret Heffernan as probably the most successful Irish businesswoman since the creation of the state. And then you actually look at it and go, well, why actually limited to businesswoman, business person? And like, you know, and there are criticisms of her in the book, and there may be flaws because nobody is all good or all bad. There's always grey areas and the rest of it. But she is a phenomenally successful and interesting person. So I just had great fun in actually bringing the narrative all the way from 1944 up to the present day.
And likewise, then, the overlap between, because, of course, going back to your previous roles in print journalism, the overlap then between Ben Dunn, Lowry, all that comes with that is great for us.
Even going back to Micheál Martin's difficulties at present, it's not been a good year for Micheál Martin. Started by having that relationship with Michael Lowry for the formation of government and allowing Michael Lowry to take control of that group of independents. And I think we all know Michael Lowry and we think of things like the mobile phone license and the rest of it. But you forget the stuff.
Wirecom and the house?
The telecom house. I mean, that story in itself, I would argue, should be disqualifying for Michael Lowry from playing a role in public life. And, you know, that's the type of his relationship with Ben Dunn plays a part in one of the chapters of the book, in the relationship with Charles Hawley. So I think hopefully there's something for everybody in this, because there's a lot of political intrigue as well, as well as the drama of Ben Dunn's life, the kidnap to me being more important than Orlando and starting off, and probably not given enough sympathy for what he went through when he was kidnapped by the IRA. And then the thing with money as well for the family. It has been a salve in certain situations, but it's also been an accelerant to difficulties, because it is a family that has dealt with a lot of addiction issues and has had very sad outcomes on many occasions because of that.
You mentioned that the international competition coming in. At this point, their capacity to resist that competition, is it as strong as ever? Or
absolutely. I mean, like, this is Ireland's most shopped-in supermarket, despite the existence of Aldi and Lidl. You know, over 1 in 5 of every euro we spend in the shops is, and our shopping each week is in Dunn stores. It is incredible as well how they've managed to become, as they say in Cork, for example, people in Dublin might be familiar.
You're from
with Cornell's Court, yes. But I am actually, yeah. But there's a big Dunn stores, even bigger than Cornell's Court, out on the outskirts as you head off into West Cork, known in Cork as Posh Dunn's, because Dunn's has done the extraordinary job of managing to bring itself upmarket while still retaining cheaper prices for certain things. It has, you know, people think retailing is easy. Yeah. It isn't. Yeah. There's lots of examples of companies that have gone wallop. The most interesting one in some respects is Ben Dunn Sr. first worked in Roche's Stores. Who remembers Roche's Stores?
Yeah. Well, the title of the book is Dynasty: Scandals, Triumph, Turmoil and Succession at the Heart of Dunn Stores. Author, of course, Matt Cooper. Big thank you to Matt. Likewise, thank you to journalist Lise Hand and Kieran Cuff, co-chair of the European Green Party.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Brought to you by Standard Life. Retirement specialists getting you ready for your second life.
Give the gift of rugby this Christmas. Make sure the rugby fan in your life kicks off 2026 the right way by seeing Munster take on Cast Saturday, January 17th at 5:30 p.m. in Thomond Park. Tickets available now at munsterrugby.ie.